Looking at the picture of David the artist. David the artist. I am so grateful that God included in the Bible the arts. I am so grateful that the Bible includes and validates by its inclusion the reality of poetry and the reality of music and the guy like King David, who seemed to move in that artistic flavor. Growing up, I did not have much appreciation for the arts. I was quite limited. I mean, I grew up in 20 miles south of Golden, B.C. on a farm. So I don't know how much artistic influence I could get put into me. But I had a couple of strikes against me. But I did try to delve into it a little bit. I had this brief foray into the arts where I remember I saved up a little bit of money and I saw on TV that they were offering the great works of Tchaikovsky and all in one nicely decorated box. And I sent my money away and ordered it. And I remember when it arrived, I had these seven LPs. And I put them on and I would listen to, put them on, sit on the stereo. You remember how we used to do that, right? The big, huge stereo. And we lift the lid, put a record, put it down, jump on, and just sit there and listen. And in all of its stereophonic beauty. And I would just enjoy it. I've always enjoyed Tchaikovsky. I just have always loved that. The cannons thundering in the 1812 Overture, and hearing them thunder out as part of his symphony. It is an amazing piece. And so that was my brief foray, which I think my parents were pretty proud of, because the last album I purchased on TV through one of those great little ads was Katel's greatest works. I believe it was called Katel's Goofy Greats. And you remember that? Ahab, the Arab, Ali Oop, the Purple People Eater, and may the bird of paradise fly up your nose. May an elephant caress you with his toes. You remember that one? Anyway, come on. He used to bebop. Okay, Len remembers that one. It goes back a ways. I think when my parents saw me going for Tchaikovsky, they thought, okay, we're getting them off of that. They're a Purple People Eater. Purple People Eater. I can't even say that one. But I remember your music was probably the one area of the arts where we used to get pushed a little bit. In school, do any remember music appreciation? Do they still do that? Do the kids have music appreciation? They have to sit around and listen to music and the teacher gets to pull stuff out? It's called which? They do a talent show. Okay, well, in our day, we had to sit around. Well, they pulled out this ugliest looking record player you ever saw. And they pull this little record player out, flip it up, and the teacher would throw in records. And they'd be like Rolf Harris. But I have to admit, the Kinsmen Trio really got my attention. I just love that song, Kinsmen Trio singing, here's to the girl who stole the kiss and stayed to steal another, Okay, Kinsmen Trio. You remember that? No, sorry, no one. Come on. But see, that's what music appreciation was. Playing ridiculous songs that you never would listen to, and then he would sit there and play them, and he'd laugh, and then he'd tell us stories, and we'd have to listen to them. That was pushing us into this idea of having to appreciate and listen to music. And so we had a little bit as I was growing up. But I got to admit, I don't think I had much appreciation for the arts. And there's a couple reasons. One, perhaps, is because of our economic income level. I mean, the reality is, you might stereotype it, but we were lowbrow people. I mean, we were farmers. We didn't have much money. So, we didn't excel much in the way of arts. We didn't even go to movies, but we didn't go to the playhouses, and the dramas, and we didn't go to ballets, and we certainly didn't, sit around and listen to the fine arts. We didn't go to art museums, we went to the P&E or something like that, right? We didn't have that kind of culture in our society, at least in the area of our culture. People who went to art galleries and things, those were high and totty people, And they just weren't quite us. So really, in many ways, the arts were considered to be something that poor people didn't really embellish. And so we just didn't have much. Then there's a second strike against it, and that was I was an evangelical Pentecostal. I grew up evangelical Pentecostal, and we did not do that kind of nonsense. Right? I can remember Ricky Avinga. Ricky Avinga was singing in church, in Avitzer Church, and he would get singing. He was a great singer, man. He would just be singing like, and he'd go like this. and he'd be singing. His hand would go like this, and he'd go like that. And afterwards, the pastor and the worship pastor and that, they'd say, "You gotta stop that, okay? If you get that hand up there one more time, that's it. You're not gonna be singing anymore." So he'd be up there singing some solo, right? And he'd be like, and you could tell it was like harnessing him, and his hand would be like shaking, because he would get lectured. Stop it, you know. We don't do that kind of sensual, carnal stuff here. Our songs were only to give words of glory to God. That's it. So the music all had almost the same rhythm and the same kind of tone to it, because it had nothing to do with the music. We didn't embrace it. So, you know, nowadays to be able to land loose on the electric guitar and just wail a little bit, right? I look at it and I go, wow, that's great. I look, it's great. But I'm telling you, I don't know if you're around the church 20 years ago, but we certainly didn't let people do that kind of stuff. Not at all. That was just carnal. And so I grew up in a culture where the arts were considered to be senseless, pleasurable items that we stayed away from. And like I said, we didn't even go to the movie theater in our practice of holiness, let alone a ballet or some other kind of theater. We just didn't do that kind of stuff at all. So all these strikes against me, it leaves really what is not just for me, but in many of the people who grew up in a culture like mine, is a difficulty to embrace the arts. A real difficulty to sort of even understand the artistic mind. To see it. It's kind of weird. So it's taken a long journey for me to come to appreciate the artistic side of who I am. And I remember when I first started, for me, it was writing. I started writing, and I would write poetry. I'd write sermons that were more poetic or storytelling in nature. And as I began to do that, I began to realize that there is a story within me that wants to come out. That's the artistic side of things. And I began to grow and learn in that. But the reality is, we have long had this idea that art doesn't matter. One of the theologians, a guy named Frank Gablin, had written, he answered the question, why should we care about art? And he said, the answer is that art belongs to human life. Pervasive and influential, it is an essential element of man's environment. And when art is unworthy, man's spirit is debased. So Gablin was just reminding us that it's a part of our environment. We live in the context of beauty. We live in the context of art. And I'm so grateful for the fact that we can talk about David the artist. I'm so grateful that we can write songs right out of the book of Psalms. Take them word for word even, and write songs, put some modern lyrics to it, and just sing along as as the people before us had done. So we're going to look at 1 Samuel chapter 16, and there is a story that we glanced on briefly last time, but we're going to take a little peek at this 1 Samuel 16 as we see the introduction of David the artist. 1 Samuel 16, starting at verse 14, it said, "Now the Spirit of the Lord had departed from Saul." So remember, Saul was the king who was the first king of Israel, and he had become disobedient to God. He became proud in his heart, hardened in his heart, wasn't listening to God anymore, and God rejected him and anointed David king. And now this follows right after his being anointed as king. And the story goes like, Saul, an evil spirit from the Lord tormented him. In other words, he had taken away his anointing, and even he was plagued by this annoying spirit. So Saul's attendant said to him, "See, an evil spirit from God is tormenting you. Let our Lord command his servants here to search for someone who can play the lyre. He will play when the evil spirit from God comes on you, and you will feel better." So Saul said to his attendants, "Find someone who plays well and bring him to me." One of the servants answered, "I have seen a son of Jesse of Bethlehem who knows how to play the lyre. He is a brave man and a warrior. He speaks well and is a fine-looking man, and the Lord is with him." So this whole thing, you don't want to just, I guess, bring an ugly guy into the presence of the king. So he's fine-looking, you know. He's a great guy. I think he'll be well-received. I think he'll like this guy. So let's get him. So then Saul sent messengers to Jesse and said, "Send me your son David." Which is kind of ironic, right? Because Saul at this point is unaware of the fact that David has just been anointed to be the next king in place of Saul. And in a twist of irony, Saul sends for David and says, "I need you to be here in the throne, in the king, with the king." And so Jesse took a donkey loaded with bread, a skin of wine, a young goat, and sent them away with his son to Saul, with his son David to Saul. David came to Saul, entered his service, and Saul liked him very much. And David became one of his armor bearers. Then Saul sent word to Jesse, saying, "Allow David to remain in my service, for I am pleased with him." Whenever the Spirit from God came upon Saul, David would take up his lyre and play. Then relief would come to Saul. He would feel better, and the evil spirit would leave him. It's just interesting how music has this soothing effect. They are actually exploring more and more now music and arts in the realm of psychology. My neighbor was a drummer, and she was doing art therapy at UBC to get her master's in art therapy and counseling. Because they use arts as a part of a therapy tool in counseling. And I thought it was interesting that even in the Bible, we go back and we recognize that this troubled spirit that was upon Saul, that was bothering him, could be addressed by listening to inspired music. Something in the what David, doesn't tell us what he played, but it just says something in as David began to play. And I think it has a strong idea to do with the fact that he was anointed. As he began to play, this evil spirit would go away, and Saul would find himself resting. I don't know if any of you have you ever experienced that, where you came into the service and just sitting under the anointed music, maybe even just driving down your car, driving down the road in your car, you just put on some worship music, and you just felt like your peace was beginning to come back over you. Music has that power, especially that which is anointed and blessed by God. So we see here in 2 Samuel that David, not in personal indulgence, we see that David was able to just play and bring comfort to him. So he's a musician. That's part of his artistry. But I want to point to a couple other places where David is demonstrating his artistic ability. Look at 2 Samuel chapter 6. It says that David danced before the Lord. David danced before the Lord with all his might. He was a jumping and a twirling. He was not just tapping his toe, you know, because in church, that's what I was taught. You could tap your toe, but if you kind of swayed like this, you know, that's a gospel church. You know, that's okay because they're gospel, but that's not what we do, right? No, we can't do that kind of thing. We started raising our hands and that was okay. But, you know, David danced before the Lord. So you know how we did accept it for quite a while. In the Pentecostal church, we had it. But in order to disassociate ourselves from the sensual act of dancing, we called it dancing in the spirit. And I honestly have always been bothered by that because I never liked the word dancing in the spirit. Because in my mind, they would say, well, David danced in the spirit. No, it didn't. David danced before the Lord. Right, David danced before the Lord. We see what we're doing here is this is my heritage, Pentecostal heritage, is that we did not allow the arts to have any real place. We had to somehow create some kind of religious justification for things, and then maybe we could do it, right? So we would call it dancing in the spirit, then we could do it because we weren't dancing, right? We weren't dancing. And that's what the holiness people, that's what we used to do. But the reality is David danced. He let the music carry him along. But it says it wasn't in a self-indulgent way. It wasn't in a self-indulgent way. It was magnifying the Lord. There was an occasion that warranted dancing. And it wasn't just the joy. It wasn't just the sensuality of his flesh dancing with a beautiful woman and just, you know, going to some club or something like that. This was actually in celebration of the ark coming back, the glory of the Lord returning back again to Jerusalem. And so it was in that nature that he was able to twirl and dance and with abandonment. So with all his might, he danced before the Lord. So I love the fact that the Bible does remind us that this sense of delight and dancing and rhythm is acceptable to God. In fact, the judgment of Micah is the one that I've always feared, is that somehow I would despise those who embrace their emotions and embrace the arts. I would despise them and say, what are you doing? That's too sensual, or this or that. And in so doing, I might bring criticism like Michael did to David, and she was given barrenness as a response from God for how what her attitude was. And so I'm always careful. Like, I've never been one to, you know, in my day, we remember we had times where we had flaggers and people would have these flags and they would dance all around the church and stuff like that. And I was never much of a flagger. I just didn't quite get into it in my church. Some people want a flag and I used to kind of, you know, do it at the back. I just, you know, was always struggle a little bit with that. But I'm also careful because I'm so careful not to squash the sense of freedom and creativity that people have that they experience in the Lord. And so there is a rhythm to it. And so we try to be careful as we embrace that. So there's David dancing before the Lord. There's something about the creativity of God that is involved in this. There's something about why we engage in, whether it be dancing or art or in the arts. And I think the issue here is, as David did, was there's a resonance between what God is doing and what's around us and what's happening in here. Because the arts, and if I could say the word creativity, which is a big part of the arts, right? Creativity is that ability to create something, right? Who is the creator? God. The doctrine of creation that we hold to is a doctrine of a God who was an artist. And that's an interesting idea because in Christianity, if there's anyone who should embrace the arts, it would be a Christian. Why? Because we live in a context of a God who creates, not because he has to, not to demonstrate his power. Not because there was some battle with monsters and when the monsters lost, the great God took the monsters and formed the mountains and you know, like some, there's so many creation stories out there from different cultures and religions, but somewhat unique among them in a wonderful place is our story, which is of a God who designs and creates because he loves. Because he sees a picture of something beautiful and he makes it happen. That is the amazing God that we serve. And that's why when we resonate with that, that's where the artistry comes from. So when David's dancing, he's tuning into the wonders of the creation of God and who he is. God created the world for us and he gave us all of the raw materials of the artist. Sound. That we could make music from. That we could hear the brook and feel the gentle breeze. He gave us color. So you see some of the artwork, right? You see some of the inspiration of color that gets included in there. When we're looking at color, it's light. And it's light refracting. It's light like through the prism as it comes through and breaks into colored lights. It's this ability that God created and designed so that you and I could appreciate the vibrancy of color. And artists capture color and they arrange it. And there's patterns to it because God created a world that has pattern, that has form and it has structure. And that's what makes it beautiful. And that's what leads to us being in his image. This is the critical part of where art comes from. You and I are created in his image. And that's why you and I tend to embrace the arts over and against the monkeys or the fish. Or the grasshoppers, who generally speaking don't create museums and walk around and just enjoy the beauty of it. They don't. It's humanity. Humanity made in the image of God who embraces the art because we resonate with the Creator who also is by nature a designer and who has given us the wonderful canvas upon which our art exists. And then we have another picture of David, and it's a picture of David as the poetic prophet. 1 Samuel 23, David in his last speech before the people, his last sayings, he says, I spoke and I wrote because the Spirit of God was upon me. It was divine inspiration. David, when he wrote these songs, the book of Psalms, so many of them are David's writings. And even the poetry we read about David the king, I told you the story. He wrote an ode to Jonathan and Saul. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. Right? This was a poetic song, an ode that David wrote. And later on, at the end of his life, he says, I wrote because the Spirit of God came upon me. Who was David's muse, if you could say it that way? It was the Holy Spirit inspiring him, and he wrote. And you know, what's the most quoted Old Testament reference of scriptures in the New Testament between Jesus and the apostles? It's the book of Psalms. It's in the songs that they keep alluding to. Because why? Because it was David who got a picture of what something was coming. He saw something about what God was doing, and he wrote pictures of them. And they could look back and say he was viewing and seeing an image of what God was yet to do. So he acknowledges he worked prophetically and wrote so many of the Psalms. And again, I'm so grateful for God who includes the poetry and the Psalms in our scriptures so that we could rejoice and read the beauty of what they are. Just look at this one, Psalm chapter 1, the very first one. And Psalm chapter 1, and I memorized it as a kid in the King James Bible. But when you look in your Bible, you realize many of you have a Bible, like say, you have a NIV or a King James or something like that. And you notice that a lot of the text in the Old Testament has indented lines. It doesn't look like, some of them are just full paragraphs where they're edge to edge, you know, justified. But then some of them are all just sort of spaced, sort of artistically, it looks like. That indicates, that's where the writers here, the interpreters, are indicating it was Hebrew poetry. They're indicating it was a poem. And of course, poetry was a wonderful way to write because it was a great way to remember something. So like you and I remember the songs that we learned as a kid, right? A, B, C, D, E, F, G. How do we remember alphabet? It was so great because we could just sing it and we could get it into our head. So in this case, Psalm 1, blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers. But his delight is in the law of the Lord. And on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by the streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. See, that's poetry. That's written in a certain structure, in a certain framework, so that it flows. With one statement, a couple following. It's like sometimes we'll talk about ABA verse format, that kind of thing. This is written in a Hebrew poetry, but it's written with a nice rhythm to it. And a tech, so that you could remember it, and so you could read it. And so we're supposed to be reading this a little bit like artists. We're supposed to be thinking about it in the beauty of how it flows. So again, I'm just so grateful for the Lord who included the book of Psalms. And finally, David was an artist. So not just in these areas, but think about David's ability to be a visual artist. So here we have a lot of the visual arts placed before us. Where was David a visual artist? Well, 1 Chronicles 28 tells us that David was the one who designed the temple. Solomon built it, but David designed it. So many of you, if you look at art or architecture, you would look at a Frank Lloyd Wright building. And you would say, oh, and to many people, that's a work of art. The way the light falls, the way the lines go, the way he captures the look here, the way the window faces the right way. I mean, that's what architects do. They're artists. They build things, and they build them with beauty and aesthetics included in it. And that's what they, the great artists, that's what they, the great architects, that's what they want to do. And David was like that. He built the temple. It was a work of art. There are two columns in the temple, two columns, and they even give them names. They're giant columns that stand at the front of the temple. And as far as we can tell theologically and scholarly, when we look at things, there's no structural reason for these columns. They were designed as works of art. And the temple had these two great columns, and they were adorned with sculptures across the top. Look of a lily and pomegranates and a chain. And it was all sculpted in on the top, and then the columns that came down on either side. They were just there for beauty. And then it says David, when he had planned the walls, and Solomon built them and overlaid them with gold, and inlaid in the walls were jewels or colored mosaics. They were just beautiful walls that you could go along, look, and see the jewels and see the way the lights would hit them. And it was there for no other reason, no pragmatic reason. It was there for beauty. If you read the King James Version, that's what it says. They were there for beauty. And in the NIV, I believe it says he adorned the walls. So David had this artistic ability as he built something. Something that you and I struggle with, because as I grew up, again, everything was about form and pragmatism. function and pragmatism. So guess what? We built churches as Pentecostals, and they were like barns. They were practical boxes. And we despised the European cathedrals because they were testaments of man's pride and ego. But in so doing, we swing the pendulum so far that we forget that not every building was built by the ego of some guy. Sometimes there was a genuine desire to build something that would magnify the Lord and to have some beauty in there. And I struggle with that. And I'd love to build a fancy building that just would glorify the Lord. But the problem is none of us could afford it. I don't know, we'd have to have slaves or something like that, or take over a country and take all their product or something. How do you build such a building? You know, you just can't do it anymore. But you still want to think about how we can put the visual arts and have stuff around us that reflects the glory of the Lord. So I want to just encourage you to consider a couple things as you think about art in your Christian life, art in your involvement with our community, art in your raising of your children. Because whether you have money or don't have money, I hope that you can teach your children how to embrace arts. So here's a couple of thoughts for you guys. First is, enjoy art. Have permission to just enjoy it. This is the struggle for us as hardworking Pentecostal evangelical people, is we are uncomfortable with things we enjoy. We feel selfish. We feel it's not right. We feel we shouldn't be enjoying this. Even when we talk about, is there any kids, close your ears for a second. Even when we talk about sex, we talk about it as propagating. We talk about it as, you know, what a husband and wife must do or something like that. We don't talk about enjoying it because, you know, somehow that's evil. It's wrong to do that or something. And, you know, and oh, God, forgive us for the beauty that he gave a man and a woman. The Bible that includes the Book of Solomon that has this erotic love poetry. I mean, you say erotic because if you look at it one sense, you go, whoa. On the other hand, it's just the allowance of there to be a joy and beauty between a husband and wife. We struggle with this idea of enjoyment because we feel like it's self-indulgent. And so I think the first step we must do is give ourselves permission to honor a creative God by enjoying creation, by enjoying art, and by being able to spend time with it. So that requires you to just take time. That requires you to just go away. That could be the art of the Lord. Go up a mountain and just enjoy the beauty of nature. Going for a walk. We just don't take enough time in our world to enjoy art. We rush past and we look at stuff and go, I don't get it. I don't get it. You walk through. There's a great painter. His name is Mako Koko or something. It's a Japanese name. It's really hard. Mako is what they call Mako Fujirama. If you look it up, here's what you can do. Go to the LadnerLife.com. I posted a little news article on there where how to see a painting. And it was David the Artist. And you'll see David the Artist. And I included a link there to an article he wrote, How to See a Painting. And Mako is considered one of the foremost painters in a certain Japanese type style. But he also was a guy who got saved through art. And art literally led him to God. And even his instructors confessed that when he became a Christian, his art took off. Because something happened in his life and his art went to another place. And he's a renowned painter who happens to also be a Christian. But he wrote this little tidbit because one of the teachers was bringing the high school students in and said, how should I instruct my high school students to look at your art? So he wrote, How to See My Paintings. And the thing that grabbed me out of that was just the amount of time it takes to appreciate a work of art. He said, you look at my painting and then you have to sit there. You have to sit there. After about 10 or 15 minutes, you'll start to interact with the painting. 10 or 15 minutes? Are you kidding me? You read the book, The Prodigal Son, by, forget the name. There's a great Catholic theologian and writer. Henry Nouwen. Henry Nouwen wrote The Prodigal Son. He spent days just staring at the picture of Rembrandt's The Prodigal Son. He sat there in a bench for a full day and then went back for another day and just stood there looking at the painting. It takes time to be able to get into the space where you can begin to see that which you are struggling to see. And it reminded me so much of our Christian life. You don't see God in all his beauty until you take time. We come to a worship service and sometimes we want to rush because I got stuff to do. Let's go. You don't often even know the presence of God until you've just sat there long enough. And so isn't this telling for us in our culture today that it's a challenge for us to really appreciate and enjoy art when we are in a culture that's ready to move on now? So guess what? We're going to have to say, Lord, forgive us for spending so much time staring at our phones. We're going to have to put this away. We're going to have to lift up our eyes and we're going to have to just look at stuff. And so I think of you parents who got little kids. You know, you're going to have to get a landline because you don't want your kid to have a cell phone. So you're going to have to, I realize that. I don't need it anymore, but I realize that Britt and George, you're going to have to get a landline because someone's going to want to phone Emmy Lynn and how's she going to phone her? Is she going to call your cell? Yeah, okay, that'll be, let's see how that goes. Okay? So you want to figure that out why. So you want to keep some of these products and even the video game technology and everything, all the things that are pushing you to fast-paced stuff, you'll have to put limits to it so that you can create space to enjoy beauty, enjoy art. So think about that in the context of your family, your life, your situation where you're at. How are you going to be able to enjoy art? You're going to have to find some way to control it. And guess what? This is just, understand this. The devil is not stupid. He knows that one of his greatest strategies is to just push you into a rhythm that is so crazy and fast-paced that you will never see the glory of the Lord. You'll go right past it and go, I didn't notice. Where was it? So we have to even, to a certain degree, do like Jesus did. And we have to say, get thee behind me, Satan. And we have to say, I will not be pushed so that I do not see the glory of the Lord. I'm going to go to that worship service tonight. Or I'm going to go to that event where I'm just going to be still before the Lord. Or I'm going to go to this concert. Or I'm going to go and enjoy this painting. Or I'm going to go and sit quietly on the beach and just watch the waves for half an hour. I'm going to watch a sunrise. I'm going to get up early one day and just slowly watch the sunrise come up. And not move. Do something, right, that's going to push you beyond the fast pace so that you can enjoy the art that God has created.